Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Dave Wannstedt hanging out with Molly and Hawd.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a joy to have Coach Wannstedt with us. And Dave, we teased the idea that the Bears obviously came up short on points against the Packers, and I believe Aaron Rodgers now is a full owner of the Chicago Bears. No, that's so awful. But how many points do you need against Brady? I mean, Brady had one of his worst moments last year. Maybe one of his worst career moments, where he lost track of the downs. He didn't know what down it
was.
That's
how many touchdown passes he plans to throw on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. So he's got something to prove, and he's going to feel like they owe him one. That's a team that scores a ton of points.
Yeah, and I think the offenses are probably a push, really. I think the difference in this game for the Bears really is going to be the defense. I think Tampa's defense is a lot better than Green Bay's, you know? I think they're more explosive playing at home. Excuse me. I think that this will be a tough game, but it's really for the Bears. It's got to be the same type of game plan. I mean, they got to come up with enough explosive plays to score enough points. I mean, I think you got to go into this game and say, hey, Brady's going to score 24 points. How can we get 28? I mean, that's the reality that they're living in right now when you play teams like this. So, get it going.
You've got to go back 9 games, and that's half a season. You have to go back to December 27th of last season when the Bears scored 28 points or more, and that was 41 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Oh. This is not a team that makes a living scoring multiple touchdowns or scoring 28 points. So you go into Tampa, and it's a tall order, Dave, but what is the approach offensively? You've got a running back who'll get you some tough yards. You got an offensive line that can run block a little bit. You've got a quarterback that is still kind of finding his way. So offensively, what would be your overall approach against this Buccaneer defense?
Well, you're going to have to run the ball to slow it down a little bit. You got to try to take the air out of the football, as we say, to some degree. You don't want Tom Brady to have, extra possessions. So you got to really utilize it. And the run game is going to be a key. I think they've got that going. As I said earlier, you got to get enough play-action passes. You got to throw the ball down the field. When I say down the field, I'm talking about going for the home run. You've got to, I remember when Matt Cavanaugh was my offensive coordinator here at the Bears and at Pitt, and Matt was Joe Montana's backup for years. He got, 2-3 Super Bowls at San Francisco. And he used to talk about Bill Walsh, the head coach at the time, if the defense wasn't set up where you were going to get enough shots down the field, that he would call the play and he would tag it, take it. And if he said take it at the end of the play, he wanted the ball thrown, in the end zone, deep. And I think Matt said 3.5 is kind of what he used to keep track. Hmm. And he said they would go in at halftime, and Matt was doing all the charting. And Bill Walsh would turn to Matt and say, how many times do we throw the ball down the field? Deep, I'm talking about. Not a 20-yard crossing route. And Matt would say, once or twice, whatever it was. But he wanted 3.5. And I think the Bears got to do that. I mean, nowadays the advantage is offense, between flags and pass interference.
Yeah.
And getting guys open. But you just can't drop back and throw it. You've got to really try to do it off a good running game, and it's got to be the same. It's got to be the same as your runs. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Tony Wise was here, how, you know,
right.
And I hate referring back to the Dallas days and stuff like that, but North Turner was a pretty good offensive coordinator, and I can remember him talking to Darryl Johnson, and we did this, so I carried that over, and we did it here with Ramon Harris when we were running that play-action pass, and Ramon would go into the defensive end and just chip him and then into the flat. So that defensive end could not tell if he was blocking him or if he was going out for a pass. When you get an offense that's operating under those circumstances, now you're going to get guys open because the defense is always going to honor the run.
Right. All right.
That's where the Bears are at.
So the Bears defense, you know, it's interesting. You finally saw the defensive front that they wanted to put together. And obviously Akeem Hicks left with a groin injury, but you got a sack from Mack. You got a sack from Robert Quinn. You got a sack from Akeem, which is probably what the plan was all along, and yet it didn't – ultimately, they didn't tackle well enough. Ultimately, while they held Davante Adams down, he did get free when he had to, and that ended up being a huge play, and you don't put him down. You kind of lose track of him when he's when he's in the slot. Where are they at with this defense?
I think they just got to keep trying to put another layer on top of it, as we say, and just keep building and keep the confidence up. Because, you know, defensively, they're playing well enough by far to win the game. They really are. And they did. I mean, Davante Adams caught 11 balls the week before.
Right.
11 passes.
For,
you know, so
200 plus yards.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and they said they were trying to take him out of the game. I mean, so I thought that the Bears did a good job on Adams. Sean Desai, I think he's doing a great job. I mean, I love what the defensive line coach is doing. I mean, I'm seeing creative games up front, and I'm sure Olin Krutz, you know, really could get into detail of that. I'm seeing not just guys running twists, but guys running picks and guys pulling one guy to free the other guy up. I mean, they're for having a lot of talent, you know, with Khalil Mack and company and Quinn and those guys, Akeem Hicks, they're creating, you know, very, very I think outstanding ways to get to the quarterback, you know, without just running into guys. So my hat's off to this defensive line coach. I think he's doing a great job.
Dave, at the risk of getting some sort of social media pushback from Eddie Jackson, the Bears safeties don't tackle well. And I think that's a documented thing now week after week. We saw it with Tayshaun Gibson missing some big tackles, Eddie Jackson looking unwilling as a tackler. How would you address that? And at any point in your career, do you remember benching a guy because he wasn't a good tackler, but was a, you know, really effective in other aspects of the game?
I don't ever remember benching anybody, but I remember going out to practice and making that an emphasis. And we would go live. We would go live 7-on-7, third down drill. It was just receivers against the DBs. And I talked to Jimmy Johnson about this last week because University of Miami is probably the worst tackling team in college football. and him and I were sitting there at 4 a.m. and we were talking and saying, you know, you got to go. There's only one way to really improve the tackling, and that's do it, you know, and you got to get it on tape. So I would go live. I would really say, guys, we got a 10-play session right now. And we're going to wrap up, and we're going to have some competition. It's 3rd and 5. Here we go. Throw the ball. Call a play offense, a defense. We're going to see if you can stop them. And that you got to put peer pressure on these guys. I hope they're showing that tape to the entire defense. You know, when you have things like this going on, the quickest way to get players to respond, they respond to money, and they respond to peer pressure in this league. And when you put that tape on and you get everybody on the defense sitting in there and saying, guys, we got a chance to make a stop here, but we got to make this tackle. Are we capable of making this tackle? Do we all understand that? You know, you don't have to single Eddie Jackson out, but the players will. I guarantee you they're going to see that. And they know. And then when you're paid more, what's that?
Expectation.
Yeah, what's that Bible verse, Molly? The more given to you, the more
is
expected.
Much is given, much is expected.
Oh, you're the best. Yeah. You know? Fourth grade, that Catholic education.
That's
there you
it.
Go.
That's it.
But no,
as far as I got.
Yeah. But, But really, when you're paid more money, you're expected to make more plays. And that's all part of the deal, guys.
As we sit here and we talk about this, I mean, it can be overwhelming if you stop and look at where they're at in their schedule with the opponents coming up and all the rest of it. And I know you got to, when you're in the season, you got to look at it through a straw. You got to just keep total focus on the next game, and that's down in Tampa, and figure out a way to beat this team. They do stop the run pretty easily.
Yep.
I mean, less than 50 yards a game for opponents. It's exceptional the way they do it. Now, here are the Bears, and they've got a six-round rookie that has been playing really well, but you're stepping up in class when you start talking about Sue and Vita Vea. But you have to have that identity. You have to retain that, right? You have to be who you are.
Absolutely.
How difficult does it become if you can't do what you're talking about, if you're not running your play action the way that you have to? How do you use your running game, your run heavy offense, if you're not doing that, and you're going to run into problems, obviously, because they stop the run?
Yeah, that's it's tough. You just got to do it. And sometimes you run the ball, and it's not how many yards you're making, really. It's just that you got to continue doing it, and you got to lean on that defense. I wish I had an easy answer for you, but sometimes coaches get in this part and they want to go to trickery, or they want to go to the fakes to try to do it.
Right.
This is not the game, in my opinion, that you do it. Down there, Tampa, on the road, Tom Brady and company, no. I mean, you gotta try to be better at what you're doing this week than what you did last week, and then add a little bit more with your quarterback. He's got to be more of a runner. He's got to come up with some rushing yards, in my opinion. I mean, he's an athlete. He's proven that he can run. We know his speed, his strength. You got to come up with some ways, you know, block everybody and let him put it under his arm and run a sweep. You know what I mean? He's got to be the factor, I think, if they're going to generate some plays. It's all going to fall on him. That's part of the deal when you're the quarterback and you're the number one pick.
Got to ask you this head coaching question. So last night, Monday Night Football, we all saw it, 4th-and-1 at the 3.
Mm.
22 seconds left to go in the game. The Bills are down 34-31. You kick a field goal, you go to overtime. You go for it. They went for it. They were stopped. They lose. Right call? Wrong call? What would you have done?
Well, you know me. Somebody, Tony Wise, would have been saying, Coach, the guy in the box on analytics, he wants to talk to you. Your phone's turned off. So that would not have been a factor with me. I would have kicked the field goal, and that's just my conservative nature. You know, anytime you got a chance to get points, you get points. Although I love going for it on 4th-and-1. You know, in that situation, though, I'm going to give the guys a chance. I think we're the best team, and I always kind of looked at it this way. My coaches would say, okay, coach, what are we going to do? 4th-and-1. You know, I used to walk around the office like a nut, and I would turn to our offensive coordinator, Ron Turner, and I would say, okay, Ron, 3rd-and-1, you know, at the 50, what do you like? And then I'd see him after a cup of coffee. Hey, Ron, it's 3rd-and-15. What do we got? You know, I mean, I would just all week long make them think. And they would always come back to me, okay, it's 4th-and-1, opening drive on the goal line. What do you want to do? I said, I'll tell you what we're going to do. If we're at home, we're going for it. If we're on the road, we're kicking the field goal.
Hmm.
And that was
interesting.
That's just what I believed in. You know, it's probably why I'm sitting with you guys right now.
But is that partly because of the crowd?
You were worried
that it would affect whether you could get the playoffs?
Exactly. Yeah. If we didn't make it, momentum and all that stuff playing on the road, I always thought that was a factor. You know, I used to respect that with. You know, back in the day with visiting teams.
That was a great game, though. Great game with the Titans, who you talk about running the football and knowing your identity, not to compare because the Bears don't have a Derrick Henry.
Right.
But they ran 51 snaps. They ran 22 running plays, 29 passes. And they scored 34 points.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a shocker.
You can score points. You can have explosive plays if you execute.
Yep. But you got to stay with it, and you got to be creative, and you got to really be all in on what you're doing. And I do think the Bears are. I think they're getting closer. I love what they're doing with the extra tight ends and what they're doing. Now, I was – I had to have a chuckle. Okay, we got to talk about this one play. They line up on the goal line in a bunch set.
Yeah.
And they throw that little quick screen to combat, and two guys hit him in the backfield.
That was a Matt Nagy play. We determined that was he took over play calling for that one play.
That's going on the baseball wall.
You said it, not me. I am not. But that was definitely when I saw that play. I said, you know, that took a lot of time to think about how much time that play used up in a meeting. You know what I mean? Rather than talking about a. And then the next play, they just turned around and hand it to the running back, and he hits his head on the goalpost.
of all the quarterbacks that you dealt with and coached, was there a mechanism, a trigger word for when you knew the play was a free play and the team had gone off sides, like we saw Justin Fields threw the interception in the end zone because he thought it was a free play?
Yeah, wasn't there. I felt bad for the kid. You know what I mean? Because
the guy was offside.
He looked like he was offside. I mean, that's a tough one. You just got to throw the ball. I guess he was trying to throw it away, right? Out of the back of the end zone, he just threw it short. You know what? That's a rookie mistake. I wouldn't spend 5 seconds talking about that play with him. But, no, I didn't have a call, David. We just kind of – that happened so fast that you got to leave it with the quarterback to make that decision and go. You know?
Dave, thanks a ton. Always great to catch up with you. Really appreciate the insight.
All right, guys.
That is Coach Wannstedt. We're going to bring in the new general manager of the Chicago Cubs. Carter Hawkins joins us next. I'm Mullion Hall here on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
His passion for helping young players maximize their potential is infectious, and I have no doubt in my mind that it'll have a huge impact on that critical area for the Cubs, and it'll help us build that next great Cubs team with a wave of young players.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That, of course, is the boss, and he has hired a new general manager. Jed Hoyer has brought in Carter Hawkins. We are delighted to welcome the new Cubs general manager. He joins us on the guest hotline. presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Carter, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Well, we really appreciate you jumping on, and always good to get to meet a guy that is fresh in town, and I know that you've got two kids and a third on the way. I loved that you have a daughter named Ivy. I think that's fantastic. I don't know if you planned that.
We did not. That would have been a pretty impressive plan 2 years ago, but no.
but it's a lot of fun, and I loved when you talked about you're going to have a Chicagoan in the house. You guys are expecting another child, and your son will be born in Chicago. So that's great news.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yeah, we're thrilled and so excited to get moving. We got a lot on our hands between the family and between the Cubs, but all great problems to have, and excited to take it all on.
So how would you explain how the process unfolded, Carter, in terms of your interest, in terms of the Cubs reaching out, and then the whole interview process? What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was thorough. It was long. It was exciting. It was nerve-wracking. It was probably, over the course of the last month, obviously Jed and his group have had a ton going on, with the club, from, things on the field, off the field, staffing, all those different issues that he's been dealing with towards the end of the year. But also, got ahead of this GM process a little bit, and got in touch with my former boss, Chris Antonetti, and let him know they had some interest. I'd always, admired the Cubs from afar and admired the front office and what they've been able to do. And as I got to know them a little bit better over the course of the process, it became really clear that it was a great fit if they would have me. And I got lucky enough that they had me.
You know, we think of you coming from Cleveland, and obviously we think of the homegrown pitching and the way that Cleveland has produced so many great pitchers, and the knowledge that that you guys have about that. And I heard you say yesterday that there was no secret sauce involved in that. And I was disappointed because I'm convinced there is secret sauce. Can you use whatever secret sauce that doesn't exist on the guys already here? Or is it about drafting and developing and turning them into, I don't know, the driveline basics? You got Rapsodo, pitch lab, spin rate, spin axis. I've heard the terms. I'm not sure what it means, but I know you know.
Yeah, I mean, there is no secret sauce. And my wife, as I was walking out the hotel room this morning, she says, "Don't say processes again. You said processes way too much yesterday." Said, "Okay, I got it." If you had chosen processes on your buzzword bingo yesterday during the press conference, you would have been a big winner.
Yeah.
But that's the gist of it, though. I mean, it's being really deliberate in all of our decisions. It's being really deliberate in the plans that we have. It's taking all that information that you just mentioned, how the ball's moving, how the body's moving, all those things that you mentioned are just measuring devices. And the thing that the newer age game of baseball has been able to do is measure things at a more detailed level than they ever have been before. But if you throw that all at a pitcher, you throw a lot of stuff at anybody, they get confused. And so you got to figure out how to distill it down to really simple to understand information, which is hard. One of my favorite quotes of all time is, "I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time." And it's kind of similar in pitching. That's it's good. Like, hey, like, how can we get this down to something simple that we can all get behind? And when you get a lot of people behind one little thing, you can move a long way.
So Carter, you look at the Indians 2016 draft. There have been many examples, but you look at that one as I think a lot of people point to. Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale, and Zach Plesac, all guys who were drafted maybe a little higher than projected, and all maybe have in common this sort of maybe overachiever label, maybe somebody who has a routine that they follow, maybe an Indians profile. Is there an Indians profile for a young pitcher, draft-eligible pitcher, that you will apply to potential Cub draft picks?
Well, I think the only thing that's like a total commonality amongst all of those guys is just their willingness and eagerness to improve, and their willingness and eagerness to take on new ideas, and their willingness and ability to fail and get back up again and start back over. All of them worked so hard individually to make the changes that they made to be the pitchers that they are. That was something that we targeted in the draft. Now, obviously, there is a requisite amount of skill that a player must have, but if somebody's not willing to get better, it becomes really difficult to develop them or for had to have them improve. And so those guys all did that. We had a team of people with the Indians that were working their tails off every day to make sure that they were better, you know, not just during the 5 months of the minor league season, but during the 7 months of the off season. And, you know, that's everyone from a pitching coach to a strength coach to the clubhouse guy, is making sure that the player is comfortable and in a great environment. So it's a real team effort. I know that already happens here in Chicago, but I'm looking forward to digging in and trying to help to where I can.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about your background as we look at it is obviously you have gone through, and I'll use the buzzword, processes to get to this point, but you have been involved in development, you've been involved in scouting, you've kind of seen the game through a couple of different eyes. You talked about your college experience and how that led you to where you are now as well. Are these contrary avenues that you have kind of managed to marry, or do you think that they kind of allow you to see an organization maybe a little differently than someone that has come up one way or the other?
Yeah, I think, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and what you see is what you know. And being able to see, you know, a lot of different aspects of an organization is probably built up the scaffolding of my mental models in a way that allows me to see kind of the macro potentially better than if I just stayed in one area. I mean, at the end of the day, everything that we do in a baseball operations department has to lead back to winning at the major league level. And, you know, developing players does that. Acquiring players does that. You know, signing efficient contracts does that. Making great negotiations does that. Having, you know, really tight and effective administration does that. So I think really trying to, or being able to understand how all of those pieces of the puzzle fit together is helpful, especially helpful if you try to build teams that can learn from each other. So I've been really blessed that way, but I've just been blessed to be part of really great environments and really great people who let me ask stupid questions all the time. And I'm hopeful that everyone here lets me ask stupid questions too, because that's a really great way to learn.
Carter, I think you come into a situation where there's urgency, not only next season, but every season. And there should be. This in Chicago, it's a big market. And people like us are holding Tom Ricketts accountable to behave like a big market team should. So in that context, when you look at the task in this offseason, what's your understanding about how aggressive the Cubs plan to be in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm at day one now. Yesterday was day zero, so still trying to get an understanding of where we are and you know, where we want to go with our offseason plan this year and offseason plans, you know, in future years. You know, that word urgency, I totally agree with you. And aggressiveness, you know, I totally agree with you. You know, I think, you know, that's something that it was clear to me from day one in the process through these interviews, is that, you know, people here are aggressive in trying to bring winning baseball to Chicago as often and as quickly as possible. You know, sometimes those decisions on the surface don't seem that way, but they all have that underlying understanding. Like, this is so that we can win our next World Series as quickly as we can. And I think that we'll think through our free agency process in the same way this offseason. You know, Jeff talked about in his offseason presser about spending intelligently. And, you know, I think, you know, as painful as that is to hear for you know, fans that want to say we're going to spend unintelligently and spend, you know, free willy. You know, it's something that we have to do because we know those are the decisions that help us to best put ourselves in position to bring those unbelievable moments to Chicago over and over again.
Carter, how do you develop the relationship with Jed Hoyer that we saw Theo and Jed have? And I know that's an impossible question to ask because the answer is years and years of time, but your role now is a form of partnership with Jed. How do you think what you do complements what he does? How will you guys go through that particular relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I have zero expectation of having the relationship that he and Theo had. I have high expectations of having a great relationship. You know, I think what he and Theo had was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and you know, I just not even gonna try to compare myself to that and what they were able to do. Hopefully I'm able to compliment them with some of my experiences and the things that I've learned over time. I know that I have a lot to learn from him. He's been around this game for so long. He was doing things that I would only hope to do, you know, when he was 27, 28 years old. And just has such that breadth of experiences and respect for him around the game that I'm really excited to learn from. But it's going to involve a lot of talking every single day, a lot of dinners, you know, a couple of beers, you know, getting our families together, but also bringing the rest of the front office and the rest of the organization together. You know, I think as we build those relationships, you know, not just one-to-one, but, you know, throughout the entire organization, I think that's got a chance to make us really strong and then help us continue to make great decisions.
Yeah, that involves, you know, building those relationships, telling your personal story, what your background is. What is your personal story? Where did you grow up? Who were you a fan of? And when did you know that you wanted to get into baseball as a career and this is where you wanted to spend your life?
Yeah, so I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, born in 1984. So I was 7 years old in 1991 when Atlanta won their first division. And that was right at the time Atlanta was starting to blow up from a population standpoint. They got the Olympics that year. You know, they went on to win 14 straight division titles. So it's safe to say I was a pretty obsessive Atlanta Braves fan then, and had a couple of undefeated Little League seasons with the Buckhead Baseball Phillies that really spiked my love for the game as well. My dad was the coach. We had a batting cage in our backyard and just fell in love with the game. My family fell in love with the game. And knew I wanted to play in college. Was lucky enough to get a really small scholarship to Vanderbilt. Kind of snuck in the back door there before it became the powerhouse that it did, or kind of as it became the powerhouse that it did. Around senior year, realized I wasn't going to be able to play professionally. Looked for you know, what I wanted to do with my life. Got a couple of ideas from people, and one of them was, you know, try to be in a front office. And I was kind of like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Spent most of my senior year networking and trying to understand what that actually meant. Got lucky enough to get a job as an intern with the Cleveland Indians, and figured I'd go up to Cleveland for a year and, you know, just try this thing out. And then 14 years later, I was sitting in Cleveland, Ohio with my wife and two kids and two cats, and get a call from Jed Hoyer, and here I am. It's easy as that, right, guys?
Yeah, that's simple. Carter, you look at where you're at. I'm sure you're anxious to hit the ground running. Do you have to wait a little bit on the CBA? Do you have to know what, you know, what you're operating under in order to operate?
Yeah, it's definitely looming. And I think it's looming in all 30 front offices right now. You know, hopefully we'll get a deal done here and then we can just continue business as normal. But it's something in the back of our mind, but it's an unknown. And it's an uncontrollable for us. You know, the Major League Baseball is controlling that. So for us, it's somewhat business as usual in terms of, you know, trying to understand who our targets are, who, you know, we feel like we might want to go after, how we're going to have a plan to go after those players. And then, you know, if the CBA gets in the way of that, it will. But as of right now, all we can do is prepare the way we know how to prepare.
We got to let you go, Carter. We got to know, are your cats named Chipper and Smoltzy or...
So ironically, one of them was named Sadie. So we have a Sadie Hawkins, which, nice. You know, the Sadie Hawkins dance from Malta.
Sure.
Now that was before I met Lindsay. So she had already had these are her cats, by the way. and yeah, so Sadie Towery became Sadie Hawkins, just like my daughter's name is Ivy, which was supposed to not have any meaning to it. And now she's here in Chicago. So a lot of fun coincidences.
Welcome to
that
town.
Is great. Great stuff, Carter. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, fellas. Anytime.
Best of luck to you. That's great. That is a lot of fun. How about that? So his wife has a cat named Sadie Hawkins, and she marries a guy named Hawkins.
How about that?
What the hell's going on in this
fate.
World?
Fate. That's amazing. That's called.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. FootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
We get better, bet.
We get better. NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is always a delight to talk to Mike Florio. We love our opportunity to do so, and he joins us on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys today?
You know, we're doing okay. We're holding on here. I think that it's a little difficult finding out that the Bears have a new owner, and he belongs in.
they sold the team.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was for sale, but. What are you going to do?
Wasn't George Halas a player owner?
Yes,
I think there's a certain poetry to this.
That's great.
Oh, it's too funny. Yeah, he you know, we asked Olin Kreutz yesterday. We have Olin on and asked him, like, hey, what did you think of that? And he said basically that he was miffed by it and that he'd like to punch Rodgers in the face, which is a very honest reaction. And it made TMZ. I couldn't believe that. But what are you going to do? I guess a guy wanting to punch someone is now news. It seems fairly obvious. A lot of people in Chicago felt the same way.
Yeah, hey, I think if it was newsworthy every time someone wanted to punch Aaron Rodgers in the face, that's all we'd ever be talking about, frankly.
That's great. Mike, so I got to have you weigh in on what happened last night with the Bills going for on fourth and one at the 3:22 seconds. They kicked the field goal. It's overtime. They didn't. They got stopped and they lose. What did you think?
What amazes me is how the narrative has shifted from a coach who does something unconventional and it fails gets relentlessly criticized to the coach does something unconventional and it fails and he's praised for being aggressive and the analytics back him up. And you know what? If he didn't do what the analytics required, he would have had some tough questions to answer internally because everyone's got an analytics department and everyone is pushing the same numbers like what we saw the NFL tweet from its Next Gen Stats account where the league claimed it was unequivocally the right call to go for it there. And I'm just entertained by all the various angles. We spent a half hour on PFT Live this morning talking about it because it's not like they win the game if they convert that first down. They still have to score. They're at the two. So, okay, the quarterback sneak works, and I think they got a little cute with the shotgun formation, and then Allen walks up to the line like he's trying to communicate to people, and then all of a sudden he takes the snap, and he slips a little bit. I didn't like that play call. I just say snap it to him and let him do his thing. Let him look for a receiver and let him run if he needs to instead of trying to do the quarterback sneak and trying to catch him off guard. But they still needed to get to the end zone. That's the one thing that we're overlooking in all of this. And there are so many factors that go into it. And ultimately, the guy's got to make a decision, the guy with the headset. And when Sean McDermott says, I trusted my players, here's the reality. He trusted his offensive players. He didn't trust his defensive players because, and as he said, almost in the same breath, if we had gone to overtime, we weren't confident we were going to be able to stop the Titans if they got the ball first.
Yeah, and I think he had reason to not be confident. Mike, I Dan Campbell has been a very interesting study, and he's been very emotional. They are obviously the last team now to not have a victory. And he called out Jared Goff, and then he said yesterday he's thinking about making different changes, was unspecific, but you would imagine if they're shaking things up or whatever, that Goff could be one of the guys affected by that. What do you think?
Well, he plays quarterback, and he was called out. And when you watched the Campbell statements from Sunday, he paused and gathered himself. And I think he had one of those moments where the devil on the left shoulder is telling you to do one thing and the angel on the right shoulder is telling you to shut up. And he gave into that impulse to call out Goff. And my guess would be that Campbell has tried every tool in his bag to get Goff to be kind of that badass, take charge guy he's never going to be, guy he's never been and never will be. And that's what surprised me from the moment they traded for Goff. Now, this was all about a transaction aimed at maximizing picks, and they took on Goff's contract, and they got a first-round pick for it. The general thought from the people I've talked to is that the Lions got a first-round pick and a third-round pick for Stafford, and the extra first-round pick came from taking on the horrible Goff contract. They knew what they were getting in Goff. Their GM was with the Rams. He knows what the Rams think of Goff, and it's not like he's going to morph into a different quarterback. So I think that they decided, well, we'll give him a year because we don't have a better option. But Campbell's really starting to wonder what it's going to take to light a fire under this guy. He's got the Rams coming up this weekend, and it would be stunning if he's benched before his chance to play the Rams. But I think this was Campbell's way of putting him on notice that, you know, you get blown off the field by the Rams like we think you're going to get blown off the field by the Rams, and we fall to 0-7. It's time to start looking at the other guys we have because we're going to be planning for 2022.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about this when I saw it over the weekend. Your premise that, and I think it's interesting. Nobody buys that the league didn't release the John Gruden emails or at least leak them strategically. And I think you suggested that they, by doing so, they in fact affected the competitive balance of this season for the Raiders, for other teams, for that divisional race. Do you think there's any – how many people agree with you, and how legitimate of a claim do you think that is?
Well, I think it's extremely illegitimate, or I wouldn't have written it. I look at it this way, and based on everything I've managed to learn, and it's not easy to learn things about this because not many people at the league really knew what went on, and nobody is volunteering information. From the basic standpoint of, did the league leak these emails or didn't they? Well, we didn't leak them. They insist they didn't leak them. But there was only a small handful of people who had them, and it was league office at the very highest levels, owners, and lawyers who are involved in the various communications. I think that the Gruden emails were deliberately leaked and systematically leaked to get to the end result of getting the Raiders to move on from Gruden. It started with one email when he didn't walk away. More came out, and my guess would be they had more that they were going to leak if Gruden didn't walk away when he did. My concern is this. At some point well before the start of the season, no later than June, they knew about the Gruden emails. Why didn't they deal with it when they first found out about them? Why didn't they deal with it in January so Mark Davis could have hired a coach then and gotten his team ready to go for the season? Why not do it in June at the very latest? Why not wait until after the season, right? Nobody needs to know about any of this until after the season. Let's get through the season. To drop it out of the sky in early October and to potentially derail the Raiders' season, and even though they beat the Broncos, they beat the Broncos in this haze of dysfunction and confusion and upheaval, I think that for a league that refuses to even alter the most obvious rule that may need to be fixed because it doesn't want to affect the integrity of the entire season, because if you change a rule halfway through, that undermines the games that are already played under the pressure. Baloney. They've undermined the competitive integrity of the season. The Bears won a game that maybe they had no business winning. And that affects the Packers, the Lions, the Vikings, and the other teams in the NFC that are trying to get to the playoffs potentially. So this thing has, you know, it's that the butterfly flapping its wings in the forest and changing the fate of the world potentially. And I don't want to be that hyperbolic about it, but they should have done it before the season. They should have done it after the season. I think it was wrong for them to do it during the season.
Never a good sign when a quarterback seeking a second opinion. Apparently, Baker Mayfield looking for somebody to give him some good news.
Yeah, I mean, the second opinion isn't, can you confirm the first one? It's, I don't like the first one. And my guess is the first opinion was, it's time to shut it down. It's time to get surgery. It's time to quit trying to play through this. He's dislocated his shoulder twice now in 4 weeks. The second one looked awful. That way he fell and the way he was laying there in pain, it's amazing he came back and played. And you can never question his toughness in any way, shape, or form. But this is a guy who hasn't gotten his second contract yet. And if he stands down and Case Keenum comes in and plays like he did in 2017 in Minnesota when he was with Kevin Stefanski, and you consider how good that defense is, although they've given up 84 points the past 2 weeks. But when you consider all the talent they have, if Keenum gets the most out of this team, then maybe, and we talked about Jared Goff earlier, you know, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, their contracts, cautionary tales, and the Browns have waited on Baker Mayfield. If Keenum comes in and plays well, it may be that Mayfield never gets that second contract from the Browns.
Mike, you're the best. Thank you, buddy. Great
stuff. Thanks, Mike. Great stuff.
See you guys.
Yep. That is Mike Florio. Always a joy. We're going to bring in Dan and Leyland. What are you laughing at?
I just love that Florio takes an injury to – I love Florio. He's terrific.
Yes, he is.
Baker Mayfield injury. Now Case Keenum's going to play well enough that makes Baker Mayfield irrelevant and not worthy of a second contract.
Well, Baker Mayfield isn't burning down the league now, right? And Case Keenum might be able to throw a better deep ball, frankly.
I agree about Baker Mayfield. The Case Keenum part of it to me seems like a quantum leap.
Okay.
Not a whole lot of confidence
I think that
there.
Team's ready to win. And I think you know, maybe Case ends up, he's won before filling in for players.
Case in point.
Oh, boy. You are a piece of work. We're going to bring in Dan and Leyland next. Molly and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.